Griffith Park the other day. We decided to social distance in each other's company and walk, keeping a healthy space between us. We went up to Griffith Park and it was crystal clear. You could see out to the horizon line, LA just stretching out before you. In contrast to any other time I've been up there, and you just see this gray haze and LA fading off and you can't see the horizon line ever. It was crystal clear. I mean, that was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I went trail running this morning and there was a whole ridge of mountains that I had never seen before.
Hey guys, this is Zach here. Before we jump into the second episode, I just wanted to mention a few things first. We are definitely working with a low budget here, so the audio quality isn't optimal. For one thing, my voice is noticeably lower than everyone else's, and I will personally work on that. Aside from everyone's talking volume, though, there are some external sounds that show up. I hope it isn't too much of a distraction. And we also obviously want to record on better audio equipment one day, and we apologize until then. One other thing is that our friend Tara won't be joining us for this recording. She's okay, she just decided to sit this one out. To give some context to this though, I'll quickly describe what our plan is for now. We are an art collective, as we mentioned in the first episode, that is made up of 9 friends and also goes by the name of Big Strange. We meet every couple of times a year to create an art project that one of us dreamt up. And, you know, we would love to have all 9 of us be on every episode, but that would simply be too difficult of a task. So instead, we're planning on mixing it up each time and having different people on different episodes, depending on their various schedules and how we feel. The other 3 members, by the way, are Colin, Tennessee, and Brendan, all of whom you'll get a chance to meet in the near future. Okay, I think that's all. So thank you again for joining and for being an early supporter. We really, really appreciate you. So here it is, episode 2.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Big Strange podcast. This is episode 2, Silver Linings. Today, we're going to take a look at some of the upsides, some of the positives that are already coming out of what has happened in America as a result of the coronavirus and certain quarantines and shutdowns and lockdowns. My name is Daryl, and I am a filmmaker, video producer.
I'm Hillary, and I'm a designer.
Jacob, I am a copywriter.
I'm Ellie, and I'm a photographer.
And I'm Zachary. I'm a photographer and meditator.
So let's check in. How has it been? We've recorded our first episode a week ago. What's new?
Well, Daryl, last time we recorded the episode, you were sitting across from me in our living room. And this week, you are speaking to me through a phone that is propped up in a basket of napkins.
Uh-huh. low budget recording here. Yeah, we're taking this pretty seriously in the sense that we're even like minimizing our contact with you guys who live right down the street from us. So,
yeah, we all don't have any reason to think that, you know, we've been exposed or sick or anything like that. But, you know, the practical advice coming from the health authorities is that we all must do our part to do everything we can to minimize contact with anyone but who we live with for now until the foreseeable future. And this is the outcome.
Yeah. And since then, Newsom has shut down the state of California, as much as possible. So non-essential businesses have closed. Last week, that was not the case. It's crazy to think that was actually last week that we were all here. Since Tara did a massage on Monday, and now that is like an unimaginable idea that would happen, and that was only a week ago.
So far for us over here, we have been really, really homebodies. We have not gone out really much at all, except for a few errands. We were lucky enough to go grocery shopping, kind of in a big shop, sort of before the run on the grocery stores happened. And we broke the social distancing mandate a little bit on Friday when Zach gave me a ride back from the Subaru dealership to get our brakes fixed because our car brakes went out in a very unfortunate time. Even though you don't need to do much driving right now, we thought, you know, if we do have to drive to the East Coast to take care of a sick parent or maybe just get out of the house and go into the woods or something. So thank you for that.
Food or go to the hospital or an emergency situation.
Yeah, so seemed like a risk worth taking. Thank you, Zach, for the ride.
Yeah. But we had the windows down. I disinfected everything, so we were again as precautious as we can be. Mm-hmm. I also just looked at the stats last week when we talked. I think the number of cases in the United States was at around 3,000, and now we're up to, you know, past 30,000. So it's grown 10 times
nationwide.
Yeah. So, but as a result, like you said, all of the governments, local governments are, you know, mandating or requesting that we self-quarantine, which means this coming week and the next week is, you know, majority of people are going to be home, which is an incredible kind of not something I ever imagined happening, right? So, yeah, how do we all feel about the fact that most of America's workforce is going to be home all next week and for the indefinite future?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is unprecedented, and not just for any particular group of people, but for pretty much everyone. This, not only does this pandemic affect every single person across the world practically, it is a global recession that will inevitably affect every worker, every small business, every large business. I think something that I'm feeling personally really strongly about is the timeline of it. And, you know, I think it was easy a couple weeks ago to feel like, oh, this is something that's happening on distant shores. This is far away and can't ever really come to us in great numbers or great danger. But now it's so present here in our country, and it's, you know, spreading across the globe pretty quickly. I feel like I hear a lot of people talking about, oh, in a couple of months when this goes away, or when this the danger of the outbreak decreases because of summer and the warm temperatures mean that the virus doesn't spread as strongly. And it scares me to think that there are a lot of people out there still thinking that this might be just a few weeks of hunkering down. In my own head, I feel like I've come to terms with the fact that I could be in my home not leaving for an entire year. And I've totally not only come to terms with it, I'm like completely at peace with it because it's my personal decision and, you know, our family's decision to take these measures to ensure our safety and our survival. And I still hear a lot of people referring to this situation as something that, you know, by the end of April or by the end of May, when things are different. And I don't know that that's realistic thinking. And to be honest, Daryl and I have been on a little bit of a news diet this weekend because we spent all last week just completely devouring all the news we could pull up on NPR or on our phone or on Twitter. And we had to stop because our anxiety was through the roof and we weren't sleeping well and we weren't talking much and there was a lot of panic. And we decided yesterday morning, Saturday, that we would not really consume news for the entire weekend. And that might seem a little irresponsible to people out there. We're not necessarily trying to play ignorant. It's more of just a desire to try to spend time calming ourselves and, you know, reading and journaling and listening to music and not overwhelming ourselves with panic. But I think it's important to be realistic about what's happening and to try to come to terms with the reality of the situation. And it's everyone's going to grasp this reality at different moments. And because it's so novel for us, I don't think anyone has experienced a pandemic in their lifetimes, that we don't really know how to handle it. And so we're going to really take it in and come to terms with it at different times and in different ways. But I do think it's important to grasp the potential longevity of the situation and really understand that for our safety and the safety of others and for all the medical professionals out there and everyone who is suffering, that this is not necessarily going to go away in a couple weeks or even a couple months. We very likely could be dealing with it for several months. We could be likely dealing with it into next year. It really just depends on how quickly a vaccination is created and tested, and all of the unknowns that are ahead of us. And we have to take it day by day.
Yes, well put.
Yeah well put. I would also add to that that even the World Health Organization has put out at least one statement that not looking at the news every day is something that they recommend. I think they said looking at the news down to two
in the times morning and like the evening, just so, like
That's brilliant.
I can notice it, you know, you notice it so clearly, like there's that draw to look at news, to look at the news, that kind of like sick kind of like fascination slash maybe feeling like it prepares me in some way, like sort of addictive desire to look at news and look at Twitter and just, you know, consume news until my eyes bleed. But also interesting to note how, and also as a meditator, you know, as like Zach, I meditate frequently. So to also notice the effect of that in my body, physically, in my mind, and how I interpret my own physical sensations. It's so clear, the before and after state of my mind and body from consuming that material.
Yeah, interesting. So under the advice of Zachary, which I love that, Zachary. I listened to this morning, Sam Harris has a podcast called Making Sense. And he gives a little 20-minute kind of overview of why meditation is so important right now. And one of the things he references is how one of the most major announcements was by the CDC in a public, like, speaking thing. What's that called? There's a podium, there's a microphone,
a forum?
People listening.
Press conference.
That's what it's called.
But the woman that was conducting it from the CDC said, you know, do not touch your face when you're in public. And then moments later, she licked her finger to turn the page on her speech. And Sam Harris then proceeded to tweet, how will we avoid touching our face when we don't even know what our hands are doing? And I think that that is like an incredibly poignant reflection on how powerful meditation right now in particular can be in terms of really taking stock of the resources that we have available internally and being aware of those, and being aware of what our hands are doing and being aware of, you know, how much we're looking at the news and how we're dealing with this time of incredible uncertainty and incredible financial instability, and how if we're not aware and if we're not finding ways to ground ourselves and create some separation from it, it only creates the, like, our mind becomes the state of anxiety and searching for certainty, and that only produces, you know, anxiety and agitation and frustration and hopelessness, which are all things we do not need right now.
Right.
As a way to, and I think that's something that has been, I think, a positive aspect that has come out of all of this, is that we do have this time and we do have this opportunity to kind of pause and reflect and meditate and kind of begin practicing tools that will obviously be applicable when we return to our daily life and our daily work life. But right now are absolutely critical. And how we behave now and the practices that we put in place now are the foundation for reconciling the areas of crisis in our life in the future. And as we're confronted with, this is an opportunity to do that. So
totally agree. As a disclaimer for those who are not familiar or super familiar with meditation, the kind of meditation that we're talking about is a practice where you're becoming more aware of what is happening. So you become aware of your body or your breath. And in doing that practice, you can become more mindful of your actions. So yeah, so just to further that, as if you have time throughout the day, now we all have a lot of time.
Exactly.
What you would do is you would just take 10 minutes of that, you know, day spent at home to sit and notice whatever comes up, notice sounds, notice sensations. And that will, in the long term, definitely have a benefit of, you know, noticing what your hands are doing so that you're not, you know, licking your finger to turn the page or whatever it might be.
Yeah. But also noticing the compulsions we have to deal with the anxiety. If we're, you know, like, speaking to what Jacob just said, like, I think this time of intensity and anxiety and the unforeseeable future, as it always is, but it, the pressure of that being immense, we're compulsively going to our phone. We're compulsively checking the news. We're compulsively looking on Instagram. These are the things that in daily life we do naturally do as a way to fight off boredom or irritation or annoyance. But I think it's at an all-time high because of how critical this time is and how anxiety-inducing this time is. And so here we are having this compulsions at an all-time high, but also having all-time high in terms of time at our disposal. Yeah. So I feel that it is like a really poignant moment in our history and for Americans to really actually embrace this practice.
Well, and it's not just about you. So like, as if you spent some time to just notice your anxieties and notice how you are affected by the news that you might be intaking at a high rate, you know, you'll have a positive effect for yourself, but you'll also have a positive effect for those around you. And so now that we're all quarantined with our families and our friends in closed spaces for a while, if you can learn how to, you know, tap into a place that's calming and grounded, everybody around you that you're quarantined with is going to, they're going to have a much better time with somebody, with the you who is calm versus you who is anxious because of the news all the time.
Right. Like, all, you know, Sam Harris says this often, but like, all you have to offer another person in every moment is the quality of your mind, you know? And so this is the time to cultivate that. Amen. Or candy.
Yeah. So that might be a good moment to kind of transition into this topic of potential silver linings, because you guys have mentioned a few in that conversation, one being the silver lining of having more time and the potential of using that in beneficial ways.
Well, one silver lining is that it sounds like our neighbors are doing some home renovations next door.
Spring clean. Have you
guys hearing me?
There's some hammering going on.
They must be decorating.
The wonderful time to renovate your home.
I mean, you know, you got to make that space more comfortable. It's a priority.
The last,
you know,
last two nights, our neighbors have been playing a live DJ set pretty loudly. So.
It's like 11 p.m. and it's like, oh my god,
really?
Oh my god,
that's amazing.
I can't help but see what to me feels like the biggest silver lining, the biggest maximum global view of this, that Mother Earth has reacted to our extraction and dismantling of her ecosystems with a viral attack on its most aggressive organisms in order to slow what scientists have been telling us is the inevitable point of no return in terms of our climate safety. I don't know if I am saying that there is some kind of like conscious higher power God that is pulling levers of control, but it does feel, especially in a narrative sense, that in as we have crept closer and closer to increased populations, water, food shortages, fossil fuel extractions, and the complete breakdown of our political systems to deal with what is so evidently a problem, that the globe, the organism that is the Earth has said, fuck y'all. Chill the fuck out. And so we're now in this drawdown of human activity, which I'm am really, really excited to understand the what scientists make of this sort of gap in our activity and how it will affect their prognosis of what the climate change effects are going to be. Will it create a timeline that's more positive in terms of giving us time to make changes? Will it affect anything at all? Will it not matter? Will there be an increase in biodiversity or in plants and animals coming back to habitats that they were banished out of? I don't know. That to me seems like the global sort of silver lining is that there is going to be a positive effect on the climate because we're all just chilling out. I mean, I was outside in the driveway with the dog this morning, and this is LA we're talking about, and it was dead quiet, nothing but birds. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in terms of climate, I definitely think that it'll have a positive effect. And in terms of nature in general, like if there's less cars on the road and less people out and about, yeah, you know, wildlife will start to fill the spaces that were generally taken up by humans. So
we went up to Griffith Park the other day. We decided to social distance in each other's company and walk, keeping a healthy space between us. We went up to Griffith Park and it was crystal clear. You could see out to the horizon line, LA just stretching out before you. In contrast to any other time I've been up there, and you just see this gray haze and LA fading off and you can't see the horizon line ever. It was crystal clear. I mean, that was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I went trail running this morning and there was a whole ridge of mountains that I had never seen before that I loved. And I ran that trail so many times and I was like, is there always that many like layers of mountains? I don't know if I've ever seen that whole ridge that clear before.
Yeah.
It's kind of a strange experiment in when else would we have as a global society the opportunity to experiment with a drawdown of not only human activity but just like industrial activity, transit, everything that truly affects the environment in negative ways? When else would we have an opportunity to dial down all of our, you know, environmental affecting activities in a way where we could truly see the results outside of a pandemic? And it's a kind of an ironic experiment in understanding through true events, through real events, that we will likely see the outcome of our lack of being in the world and extracting and traveling and, you know, doing all of the things that so much harm our Earth. It's unless it was dramatic policy change that enforced a shift in activity, the only other opportunity we would have for such a drawdown in activity is a pandemic. So it's a weird, it's like this strange irony of the situation where we are terrified, we are staying at home, we are physically distancing from each other, and we're still seeing a lot of people fight for their lives. And it's a terrifying time, but we're already starting to see proof that this change in our behavior, this dramatic change in our behavior, is starting to have an impact on air quality and on water quality. And it's I don't know that we would ever have, outside of dramatic policy change, a time to really experience the reality of the change in our behavior. And I think like that is, it's shocking to think about, and it absolutely does feel like a silver lining. I personally feel like on a more kind of social behavior level, and especially for the US, I don't know about everyone else, but I feel like this is a really important time for people to stop the running around and the being overly busy and the self-optimizing that I really think plagues our society. I know that especially younger generations are kind of have heavy adopters of this kind of behavior because we are often, you know, trying to overcome the fate of our generation by, you know, starting businesses, creating multiple income streams, trying to deal with climate change in a time of really just starting out in life. So we know well that millennials in particular are famous for being overachievers and being busy and really striving to succeed in life, even when life is pretty tough and possibly tougher than previous generations who had a different economic situation than we did. But it's unmistakable that a part of our society is the busyness factor. I don't know what else to call it. So I'm just going to call it the busyness. But yeah, exactly. And it's exhausting. It's exhausting to try to keep up with. There's a sense of if you do take time to slow down and be quiet and, you know, do things that are more maybe intentional, like meditating or just reading or having some quiet time, it feels oftentimes like that's time lost to things that could be more productive. And I think we beat ourselves up about how much time we spend doing quiet things at home versus how much we could be productive during our day and how much time we spend self-optimizing. And I feel like this is really a time for America to kind of come to this grinding halt where nobody can feel that pressure. because our behavior has to shift so greatly. And so I feel like we're all kind of taking a collective deep breath together and really reflecting on like what it means to be busy versus what it means to slow down. And honestly, it feels really, really good to not feel the daily pressure of go, 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 do, do, do. How productive am I being? How much money could I try to be making? How much could I be ensuring my future? Am I keeping up with my peers? Am I keeping up with my neighbors? Am I keeping up with my family? Am I making other people proud? Am I getting enough traction online? Are people seeing my business? Are my posts good enough? There's so much pressure in the heightened busyness of our society. And I feel like it just peaks every year higher and higher. And this really feels like a forced slowing down of that. And I wonder what we're going to come out on the other side of this feeling about how busy we were all the time prior to this and how much time we really saw our friends and our family and spent time connecting and spent time in quiet, you know, even solitude or quiet time, reading, meditating, et cetera. I can't help but see that as a silver lining because I don't necessarily think that trying to be busy all the time and filling our schedules and running ourselves ragged is necessarily a healthy thing for us to do.
Yes. Well said. As you were talking, you used the word collective, and something I've recently been learning about is Carl Jung, who is this psychoanalyst from like the turn of the century, who had this belief in the collective unconscious, but just even the power of our individual unconsciouses to actually create crisis for a way to force us to become conscious of things that we're unconscious of. And whether that's just beautiful imagery, I think it does very accurately depict what this moment feels like as I'm really pausing and able to embrace slowing down and being present for the things that are a little bit slower and aren't quote unquote as productive or as new or as, you know, all the things that you mentioned. And I do feel this sense as if my unconscious was like, oh, finally, just rest, you know, and how, you know, as terrifying as all of this is, it has made me confront precisely what you're saying, this continual, you know, optimizing this busyness, this feeling guilty about resting, you know, kind of way that I inhabit my daily life. And I've really been confronted with that through this experience.
Amen to that. Yeah. I think that as a collective whole, in order to survive the oncoming effects of global warming, we need to learn how to stop collectively consuming everything.
Yeah.
And in order for that to happen, we almost need, I don't say this in order to be callous. This is just one potential view that doesn't at all discount the incredible suffering that is happening and the people who are struggling. But we almost need a catastrophic event and a recession to slow down humanity's consumption of goods, of resources, and to get back to the basics of just learning how to be without consuming. And it seems to me, to learn how to do that is our only chance of really slowing down the much greater events that will make the coronavirus look small in comparison. We really need to learn how to stop. It's like the busyness on a personal level is painful. And then that amplified millions and billions of times throughout the globe is what is increasing our pace towards the inevitable, you know, cliff that we're racing towards. So all we can ever do is tell stories about the future, and you can tell stories that are about doom And I've certainly told myself a lot of stories about the doom that coronavirus is causing. But another story that I've been telling myself in times of optimism is the story that after maybe a year of quarantine, we collectively learn how to slow down and learn and appreciate the forced grinding halt of civilization, and actually learn how to adopt some of those things in absence of a catastrophic event that is causing it.
Yeah, something that came to my mind as you were saying that, you said that maybe we needed a recession, which really you would be saying what we needed is a slowdown, and this happens to be a hard lesson, a hard way of learning that. But the root word of recession, I think, is recess. And that recess was like the best time for a kid in school, right? It was like the chance to go outside and like take a break from learning, like to take a break from like constant different classes of having to learn all day long. And then you get recess, which is like time to go out and play and to relax and to have fun and do whatever you want. So yeah, there is this bright side of this thing, which is all of a sudden families get to spend time with each other. All of a sudden people don't have to drive around to soccer practice and to, you know, get their haircut every week or whatever it might be. Like, we really get a chance to sit at home, to not have to be optimizing all the time. And yeah, you get a chance to do some things that we maybe put on the back burner. So Hillary and Darla, I know you guys mentioned you had like a gratitude journal, and you were making some art and things like that. How was that for you guys?
It's transformative. It's a great way to start the day. It's Hillary's idea. And we did it yesterday and today just by listing for 10 minutes things we're grateful for in this time. And one of the things that we both identified was we're actually grateful for this quarantine and pandemic in a way. Grateful for the collective behavior that it's creating. There's a certain kind of solidarity that's emerging as a result already that is really inspiring to see. Now it's mostly online, but we also learn about what other things are happening out there that we can't go and see for ourselves. And now that it's happened and it's already been going on for just a week or so, I can't imagine it being any different. I almost, in a weird way, don't want to go back, you know, to the way that it was already.
I think something that's interesting is I've read a lot about journaling and the benefits of journaling. And honestly, I didn't start regularly journaling until last year. And I was really consistent with it all year. It was a goal of mine. And I had a much smaller or thinner journal last year. And you know, I've continued with that practice into 2020. And because of my curiosity around the benefits of journaling, I've just read a lot about it and tried to learn like what other formats of journaling are there. And so of course there's a lot of people who write about, like gratitude journaling, and I've heard some friends talk about it, and I've, read some really good articles about it as well. But the funny thing is I would always just do kind of regular personal journal entries with the thought of like, you know, one of these days I need to sit down and gratitude journal. And I just kept telling myself that I would do it. And I didn't actually start doing it until yesterday. So it was this thing I wanted to do. And then I would put it off or make excuses in my head. And it's almost as if this situation was the catalyst that actually made me sit down and do it. So not only did I need the inspiration, but I needed the time to really just sit down and do it. And yeah, we've done it for the last two mornings and it's been really great. And what we do is we just set a timer, and we started out at 10 minutes. We might change that, but we're going to probably try to do it as much as possible during this time. And then once the timer goes off, we read them to each other. And it's interesting to see the overlap. It's interesting to see you know, even just from yesterday to today, you know, the ideas and the things that come out of it. And it's just a really wonderful, it's a wonderful practice for oneself, but it's also a wonderful practice to hear what's going on in a loved one's head and in their heart during this time. And they give you reminders of things that you didn't think to write down. You know, a lot of what Daryl is mentioning in his journaling is slightly different from mine, but his is so beautiful. And then I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I didn't think about that, but I'm so grateful for that too. So it's just been really uplifting during a difficult time. And I would encourage anyone who likes to journal and has a journal to try it, because it's just so simple, but it is a nice way to remind yourself of not only the silver linings of a very scary and difficult time, but the things that we take for granted really easily in day-to-day life. And I had a good friend a couple days ago remind me of that. We were kind of talking about like client work before this period versus client work during it, and how it was so easy to be like, oh, you know, that certain client or that kind of project doesn't creatively fulfill me as much as others do. And, oh, I want to try to dial that kind of work back. And now we're seeing the importance of just having work to hold on to, and what a privilege that is, and how many people are out of work right now, and to not be so judgmental of the things and the opportunities that are presented to you and how creative or sexy that they might be. And so he helped plant the seed for that idea, and it's kind of manifested into thinking about things I took for granted prior to the last couple weeks versus the way I'm holding things close now during this time.
Yeah, I'm reminded too by what you're saying that, you know, as much as viruses are contagious, so are emotions. And so if you're dwelling in news all day, you will be stressing yourself out, and then that stress is contagious to those around you. Versus if you're, you know, having a gratitude journal time for yourself in the morning, the benefit there is that you'll be less stressed, you'll be happier, and that'll
infect everyone.
Yeah, it'll infect everyone. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
With your positivity. As we sort of start to approach the end of this podcast, there's just one little like caveat or one little piece that I just want to bring into the conversation, which is I'm also conscious as we're speaking of the people throughout the world and within this country who don't have the privileges that we do of even having apartments, or if they do have apartments, the privilege of being able to stay home, or the privilege of being able to weather any kind of financial downturn. I'm really conscious of those people. And so I don't know. I mean, this is a podcast that's made from our limited perspective and most likely geared towards people who are also freelancers, you know, maybe living through similar circumstances as us, maybe not. I actually don't know. But as well as gratitude, one thing for me is compassion to bring. It's a way of addressing suffering is to embody compassion. And another hope of the silver lining is that we can develop the political institutions that learn how to care for those people in times of catastrophe, but to begin to wake up to the fact that many, many people throughout the world and within this country are suffering catastrophes every day, whether or not the coronavirus is active. And I can only hope with the deepest sense of sincerity that it comes to pass that we as humans learn how to care for each other.
Well, that's the silver lining of, you know, the political silver lining, hopefully, is that we can't go back to normal, and that there is going to be a desire for things to return to quote unquote normal for people. People are going to want things to be like how they were. And the fact is that, well, one, they won't be. And two, they can't. They just absolutely cannot. If we had in this nation the kind of institutions that were devoted to caring for people, we would probably not have to do quite so many of the things we're already doing right now, i.e., we would not be facing the threat of economic fallout from the potential medical bills that we will most likely incur as a result of this, or the paid leave that we don't get, or the time off that we don't get, or the rent payments that still have to be made. We can't afford to go back to this system because it kills us. The profit motive literally kills us in this country. And if this doesn't demonstrate how materially unsafe that viewpoint is, and how like hilariously inept the rich, wealthy, powerful people in this country are to deal with these kinds of issues, then we will have learned nothing. And I like to think of this time as that we're all on a labor strike right now, because you notice that the reason that the economy has turned down is because people can't go to work. And it's the people who go to work who generate the wealth and the income that benefits the people who own the industries and the wealth. And so if we can't work, we can't make money for other people. And we should think of this time as being on a labor strike until we get what we deserve. And I don't know if that will materialize or not. It will take a lot of online activism, but things will morph and change as a result of this, I know. And I hope that the narrative that emerges is that if we don't collectively build institutions to care for one another, then any disaster that we face, we will all just wither because we have never invested in each other.
Yeah, totally agree with you. And I would also add that it isn't just the institutions that need to become more compassionate, but also everybody. I saw a tweet earlier that said this guy had witnessed in a grocery store, this older woman said she couldn't find a product in the store. And she said she couldn't find bread. And so this younger man was in line and he had bread. And he said, you can have mine. And then said, and take anything else you need too from my shopping cart. Mm-hmm. And the thing that surprised me, I think, was that we don't do that already. And that why would it require a global catastrophe for a young man to offer whatever he has to an older woman at the grocery store? So I think it's a wake up call to everybody on a personal level as well, to be, like you're saying, Jacob, to become more empathetic.
And compassion. It's hard to know what to do in the face of suffering. I think that's one of the ways that our anxiety is ramped up, when we see suffering and we feel so powerless to do anything about it, because, you know, we're just small cogs in a gigantic machine. But compassion is a reasonable, it's a first response. You know, it may inspire further action, but to learn how to feel compassionate towards your fellow humans is really, I think I would add that that's a valuable thing that we can do with our time in quarantine, is to really look into how to do that and to start to do that within ourselves, and then turn to ways to how to activate that through organizing. And maybe once the compassion is there, the answers for what to do will come.
Well said, you guys. I think compassion is when we feel like this is a time where we lack control over external forces. We lack the control of how fast our government responds to the pandemic. We lack control about how long the pandemic might last. We lack control over, our potential financial well-being. over the next several months. There's so many external factors that are with, you know, just beyond our grasp. And I think the compassion is absolutely one of those things that we have complete control over. That is within our power to cultivate and to demonstrate as individuals and as, you know, a collective culture. And I think, like, I'm taking a term from Martin Luther King and something that was echoed by Bernie Sanders in one of the recent debates. But I think we're really, this pandemic is like holding up a mirror for us to our culture and allowing us to really see that rugged individualism that so much of society is forced to operate under, and really see it for what it is and how much it doesn't work, how we struggle under that paradigm, and that compassion and connectedness and really being there for each other, especially at a time like this when it just feels so terrifying to live day to day, especially for those of us who are at greater risk, more unstable financially, and less fortunate in general. So that is something we absolutely have the power within ourselves to cultivate and share and teach each other and then spread it around as best we can.
That's beautiful.
As the birds chirp in the background.
All right. Well, perhaps that is a good place to kind of wind up and say that's the second, you know, episode of the Big Strange podcast. Woo-hoo. We are doing it.
We did it.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yes,
and
you too.
And
we love
to anybody
you guys.
Who's listening, we don't exactly know. We don't have any concrete plans for this thing, but we do. We are aiming to try to do this every week or so. So, and we don't know what we're going to talk about. It's just all, obviously, a week by week thing, where whatever comes up. So.
Yeah.
And if you like it, give us them 5 stars, baby.
Yeah, we're planting the seeds of a podcast, so go easy on us.
Show compassion.
Speaking of
be compassionate.
Awesome, guys. Okay. All right. Okay, until next time.
All right. Until next time. Big Strange out.